Now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. We need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have to have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Been a big weekend in Sydney just gone, with a long weekend and two football grand finals. People wandering about with their special team colours on, whooping up like there is no tomorrow. And just wandering through the streets of Sydney, you tend to always get hit up by homeless people for cash. We've got a pretty bad homeless situation here. And I was amazed. One particular guy came up to me and he says, "Hey, buddy, can I borrow $10 till payday?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. When's payday?" And he says, "I don't know. You're the guy who's working." This week on the show, we catch up with the author of the book Waikiki Tiki, Art, History and Photographs. An incredible book. Philip S. Roberts is going to be talking about this marvelous pictorial book. Plus, our look at the world of swag. Some great events to check out. In fact, a new exhibition in Canberra, which I just know you're going to love, from an artist who painted right through the 30s, 40s and 50s, but actually lived in New York City. We've got our blogosphere, a very cool blog sent in to us from a listener of the Cocktail Nation. I've got a book about MI6, news on Tony Curtis, who just recently passed away. We'll catch up with entertainment reporter Peter Ford, who has an interesting take on the life of Tony Curtis. Plus, some fabulous music as we kick it off with Jimmy Vargas and Dahlia's Web from the album Death Swings and the Cocktail Nation.
The Cocktail Nation.
Something cool I'd like to order. Something cool. It's so warm here in town, and the heat gets me down. Yes, I'd like something cool. Well, it's nice to sit in, watch a while. Now I know it's a shame I can't think of your name. I remember your smile. I don't ordinarily drink with strangers. I must usually drink alone. To ask me, and I'm so terribly far from home, like my dress. I must admit it's very odd. But it's simple and neat. It's just right for the heat. Save my furs for the cold. A cigarette, well, I don't smoke them as a rule, but I'll have one. It might be fun with something cool. I'll bet you couldn't imagine that I one time had a house with so many rooms I couldn't count them all. I'll bet you couldn't imagine I had 15 different beaux who would beg and beg to take me to the ball. And I'll bet you couldn't picture me the time I went to Paris in the fall. And who'd have thought the man I loved was quite so handsome, quite so tall. It's just a memory I had. One I'd almost forgot, 'cause the weather's so hot and I'm feeling so bad about a day. He's just a guy who stopped to buy me something cool.
The Blue Martinis and Something Cool. Brand new book just arrived, Waikiki Tiki, Art, History and Photographs, contemporary landscape style book that offers a pictorial documentation of the past and present of Tiki throughout Waikiki as well as Hawaii's island of Oahu. It's a wonderful, wonderful book that kicks off from the very beginning and even forms the basis of the current Tiki scene today. I'm joined by author Philip S. Roberts. Hey, buddy, great to have you along the show, man.
Thank you so much, Coop. so happy to be addressing the entire Cocktail Nation.
This is a lovely, lovely book. It's pictorially, I mean, it is absolutely spectacular. And I love at the beginning of the book, you talk about how, you know, if only you could go back in time, you could take a camera with you. I mean, this is pretty much a time machine, isn't it?
Yes, and I mean, it's very much a time machine. And how I've often wished that I could do time travel, because if I had the chance to take some photos of places like Canlis and the Teach and Lanai and the Waikiki Biltmore coffee shop, I certainly would have wanted to have done that.
You talk originally in the book, seeing one of the bands that we play here on the show, Waitiki 7, and you were seeing the guys play, and you were talking to Rennie Wong's dad and a couple of the other guys that were around there in the beginnings of the whole tiki bar scene. I mean,
you had all these places that were going off, and you know, so many wonderful restaurants, you know, run by people like the Spence Cliff Corporation, and you know, architects like Wimberly and Cook, you know, hugely influential.
Many of the people that you spoke to that were involved in these restaurants, I mean, they just have this marvelous feeling, this warm glow about these places when they talk about them, don't they?
It's true. People really have great feelings about this time. Memory is always important. And what I've tried to convey in my photographs and also my archival material had a lot of power to it, a lot of feeling. This place evokes romance. And I mean, I'm sitting right now on Waikiki Beach watching the ocean roll in, and I'm sure you can hear the waves.
Philip, how did you yourself, I mean, you're not a native Hawaiian, how did you get into the whole tiki art interest? How did that develop for you?
When I first arrived in Hawaii, got around the island and doing radios, I started noticing these wonderful expressive works of art. And this was about 1997. And I went to the bookstore, and I couldn't really find anything about it. The Book of Tiki hadn't come out yet. Then I started noticing these things disappear. 400 or 500 photographs down the road, I went, I kind of have a book idea here that I could just put these all together, and people will enjoy looking at all this great, fantastic art in the Waikiki and Oahu Islands. There's just so much of it. So many great carvers, many of whom are nameless.
Visually, it just sends you there. I mean, you've done an incredible job getting these pictures and keeping them and archiving them, because it's a true testament to the work of these carvers throughout Hawaii. I mean, today and certainly in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, getting some of these pictures are like lightning in a bottle. Sometimes you'll get a picture and then you'll want to go back and get another picture. And then there's others, of course, that are, you know, on apartment buildings and stuff like that. And those are not moving. So some of those are easy to find again. But for the most part, finding these pictures was awfully lucky to get there in time to see them.
Philip, to get your book, where can we grab it now? It's available everywhere. I know it's out now, but where's the best place to grab it?
Tiki Art History and Photographs. You can pick it up from BessPress.com, B-E-S-S, Press, P-R-E-S-S.com. It will soon be on Amazon, and you'll be able to buy it there. And hopefully, and all your local retailers. I'm sure someone is going to pick it up in Sydney, and it's exactly the kind of book that a space age bachelor wants to have in his pad.
Philip, congratulations. I know it's, 17 years in the making putting this book together, but it is absolutely spectacular. I certainly recommend anybody go out and grab this one. Is into this culture. Waikiki Tiki, Art, History, and Photographs. Good to have you along, Philip.
Thank you so much, Coop. And the next time you come on the town, my ties are on me, buddy.
Thank you. Martin Denny with Taboo now on the Cocktail Nation. Cocktail Nation, Coop Cooper. Actor Tony Curtis is being remembered as one of the last survivors of Hollywood's golden era. He appeared in more than 100 films. He died just last week at the age of 85 in his Las Vegas home after a heart attack. Entertainment reporter Peter Ford says that he's best known for his role in Some Like It Hot, but his personal life left a lot to be desired. I caught up with him just last week.
Often when stars die, there's always this tagline of the last of the greats. And I suppose in one sense he was, if you're talking about actors of a certain type and a certain age, but there are plenty of old great movie stars still alive, in some cases still very active. What he was the last of is the 1925ers. There were a whole bunch of movie stars all born in 1925. Paul Newman, Rod Steiger, Rock Hudson, so the list goes on. And he is the last of that lot. But he was a big, big movie star, you know, in his day, and he was a horrible human being right up until yesterday. One of the really nasty people of Hollywood. An extraordinary ego, and he did make a lot of good movies, there's no question about that, and leaves behind a great body of work and some real classics in amongst them. But if you read his two autobiographies, particularly the second one, which only came out about 3 or 4 years ago, he was so disrespectful, I thought, to the women who'd been in his life, and in most cases women who weren't around anymore. You know, the graphic detail that he talked about with his sexual escapades, etc. I thought it was just really sad to see someone of his age almost crying out for attention. Eddie Fisher was out of a similar mould, saw themselves as great Lotharios and were proud of the fact that they had cheated on wives, etc., etc. So, look, he was a great movie star in his day, but a very complex man. And in fact, if you're playing around on YouTube and you want to understand who he is, there was a really fascinating TV show that I think it was the ABC showed here late at night earlier this year called Shrink Wrap. And what it was, it was hosted by Pamela Stephenson, Billy Connolly's wife, who was a clinical psychologist, and she would sit down with various celebrities and not do an interview, but actually do like a therapy session where they would have to go back to their childhood and regress and talk about their memories. And the one with Tony Curtis was probably the most interesting of them all. So if you go to YouTube, put in Shrink Wrap Tony Curtis, it'll come up.
Fascinating stuff. Coming up, it's our segment Ask Coop, this week talking about electronic retailer discounts and getting there in time. Right now, Martini Kings and Soft Sounds.
Go on, look up Lounge Lothario in the dictionary, and you'll find a picture of Coop smiling.
As long as I'm singing, there's a bell up in my brain that's ringing, making a crazy ding-dong. And if this band don't desert me, then there's nothing in the world can hurt me. Long as I'm singing my song, give me trumpets, legato, put some saxes with them, strings, pizzicato, and some rhythm. As long as I'm singing, then the world's all right and everything's swinging. Long as I'm singing my song. Is more to me than a pleasure, 'cause me and music, we go together like notes in a measure. Long as I'm singing, then the world's all right and everything's swinging. Long as I'm singing my, long as I'm singing my, long as I'm singing my.
Tail Nation on WXLV Schnecksville, Pennsylvania. VX.
Broadcasting from the City Penthouse, Sir Julian and a Man and a Woman. Bobby Darin before that, and news this week to the Penthouse. A new book on MI6 is out. It's called Lifting the Lid on the Murky World of MI6. Now, the name Biffy Dunderdale doesn't quite have the ring of Bond, James Bond. Dunderdale, Biffy Dunderdale, just doesn't quite work. But Biffy Dunderdale had a well-known penchant for pretty girls, fast cars, and terrific savoir-faire. The former British spy who claimed to recognise some of his old stories in author and close friend Ian Fleming's 007 series may have been the real James Bond. And this is the first official book on the history of the British MI6 spy agency. Keith Jeffrey, who's a history professor at Queen's University in Belfast, wrote that he's a man of great charm and savoir-faire in an old age, and he became an incorrigible raconteur. He liked to tell stories of how, while still in his teens as an interpreter for a white Russian general, he found himself translating outside of a railway sleeping compartment where the general and his British mistress were busy cavorting. Jeffrey recalls other examples of spycraft from 1909 to 1949 that veers from Bonn to Bazaar, painting a picture of the agency's cash-strapped, freewheeling early days as it battled not only the Nazis and Soviets, but also government red tape. In one World War II operation similar to the opening scene of Goldfinger, Agent Peter Dazar, stripped off to his wetsuit to reveal a tuxedo, he's put ashore in full evening dress, smelling of alcohol, wearing a specially designed rubber oversuit to keep him dry while landing. And rather than leave him somewhere out in the dunes, the aim was for him to be able to mingle with the crowd on the front. Having landed on the beach, his colleague Eric Hazelhoff sprinkled a few drops of Hennessy brandy on him to strengthen his partygoer image. If you love spy history, I think you're going to absolutely love this, tackling the early days of MI6. Check it out. Time for our segment, Ask Coop. This one from Boyd in New York, who writes, Dear Coop, a large electronic retailer announced on radio that it would give an $800 video camera to the first person in the store wearing a particular football jersey. My friend made a beeline but was beaten there by another father and his young boy. These two, however, got lost in the store and couldn't find the camera section, allowing my friend to get there first. The beaten dad maintained that they were actually the first ones in the store. Was my friend entitled to keep the camera? Well, Boyd, if Charles Darwin was alive today and he lived in Australia and he wrote a column for a radio show, he'd probably answer this in the context of evolutionary theory and say this was a perfect example of natural selection, because even though the father and the son arrived in the store first, they got hopelessly lost looking for the camera section, their dismal cognitive and spatial skills letting them down as they scurried around the kitchen appliance area. The dad picking up a toaster and yelling, Son, does this look like a camera to you? It's got a shutter. Nah, maybe the camera's over there inside those big fridges. Darwin would argue that your friend is a better adapted organism in the environment, that he may carry an advanced problem-solving gene which allows him to navigate those store aisles with great speed, like a lab rat scampering through a maze towards the $800 ultra-compact HD video cheese. Therefore, your friend is entitled to keep the camera without any feelings of guilt, because fair or not fair, this is survival of the fittest. The dominant animal wins, the weaker animal loses. And Darwin might even suggest that this event could influence successive generations. The losing father and son may come home forlorn, causing the son to lose all respect for his dad, causing the weaker genes to eventually die off because the son chooses a life of non-reproduction. Such is his camera-losing shame. However, your friend may use his new camera to shoot some amusing YouTube clips featuring ninja kittens, which may lead to a successful internet blogging career, which may lead him to wooing a comely female, and together may produce offspring who are perfectly equipped to survive in a highly competitive radio promotional retail navigating future. Strong, smart offspring with multi-hinged aisle-scampering legs and keen, camera-sniffing snouts. I hope this helps, Boyd. If you do have a problem, email me, thecocktailnation@gmail.com. And now Kenny Sasaki and Jellyfish from his recent album Island Slumber. Thank you.
Coop Cooper. We know he's a former spy because the CIA denies knowledge of him. So that's got to be right, I guess.
You need cool air, baby. I'm not fooling. I'm gonna send you back, gonna send you back to school there. Way down inside, honey, you need it. Gonna give you my love, gonna give you my love.
Why a whole lot of love? Why a whole lot of love? Why a whole lot of love?
You've been learning, baby, I've been yearning. Oh, tell me, what's that burning? Way down inside, oh, honey, you need it. Gonna give my love, yeah, but it's my love. Hey, got a whole lot of love. Oh, what a whole lot of love. Why hold that love?
Cocktail Nation and Fire and Theft from Melbourne with a whole lot of love. Got a great little kitschy vodcast for you to subscribe to. It's called Velveteen Lounge. Very, very kitschy, very, very funny. And we'll catch up with the author of that in the coming weeks. Soon we're going to enter the blogosphere of the Cocktail Nation. Right now, Hans Carl and the uninvited guest from his album, which is out right now, called Shagzotica. We're going to be talking to Hans Carl in the coming weeks. This is a marvelous album you're going to love. The uninvited guest on Cocktail Nation. Nation Octobop and Goodbye Pork Pie Hat.
This is Deep Space Mission 9. We're now entering the blogosphere of the Cocktail Nation.
TheCocktailNation at gmail.com. The email if you'd like to send in a blog maybe that you have come across, that you follow, or maybe one that you write yourself. For example, Dean Abbott has sent us his blog, oldfashionedman.wordpress.com. Retrospective dispatches from an old-fashioned man. It's a sweet blog about his daily life, and Dean writes every single day on this blog, so it's fun to follow his life and his musings. Nice work, Dean. Check it out. Let's finish off the night with Sammy Davis Jr., and you're gonna hear from me. Stay hip.
Thank you very much. Everyone tells me to know my place, but that's not the way I play. Then why am I daring to show my face? 'Cause I've still got something to say. Move over, son. I've still got to climb There's so much to do and so little time. There's friends to be made and towns to be played. You're gonna hear from me. Make me some room, 'cause I gotta dance. Don't tell me no, you haven't a chance. When I first began, I said yes I can. You're gonna hear from me when you say do a number for us. Why, it makes my day, and I'm good for one more chorus. I've gotta sing, so I won't pretend. I wanna sing right through to the end. It sounds kind of hammy, but take it from Sammy. That's how it's gotta be, you see. You're gonna hear from.
WXLV, Schnecksville, Pennsylvania. VX.